Hello everybody, welcome back. This is the second video for session 3 of the Exploring Theology course. And this is the session when we're looking at why is the Bible important. But at the end of the last video, if you'll recall, we were looking at, we were reminding ourselves of what our sources are for theology. And one of those is reason. And in this video, we're going to be looking at reason, what we mean by it, and how it relates to something else which is key within the tradition with regards to understanding and how we interpret the scriptures, and how we think theologically, and how we live theologically. Okay, so I'm going to put something up on the screen and just walk you through a series of questions and reflections as before. Have your notebooks ready, cup of tea. I've got my cup of tea ready, and let's get going. So the question that we're looking at here is, what do we mean by reason? If you recall from just what we were doing at the end of the last video, we were reminding ourselves of our theological sources, and so we were thinking about things like scripture and tradition, and the third one on the list, normally as the way it's presented, is reason. But what do we actually mean by reason? In terms of our, are we talking about our critical faculties, our ability to analyze and think logically, and so on and so forth. It's helpful at this point just to have an understanding that there is a sort of a historical moment for this where this really took root in our culture and continues to affect us to this day, though obviously things have moved on a fair bit in different ways. But so this goes back to the late 1600s. There was an intellectual movement that started in the late 1600s and then moved into the 1700s, so the 17th and the 18th century. This movement, a little later, became known as the Enlightenment. This was a period, as I say, in the late 1600s and the early to mid 1700s that was known for its focus on reason. There had been the religious wars in Europe in the 1600s, and which had involved Lutherans and Catholics and various denominations of people of those denominations, and there was almost an exhaustion as to the degree to which religion was involved in war. And there was a pushback and saying, well, hang on a second, to what degree do we, we need religion to be something which is universally applicable, that can be derived, its precepts can be derived from wherever you are in the world, by using our innate ability to think things through rationally, as I say, to think things through logically, with our powers of reason. And in one of the earlier videos, I talked about deism, D-E-I-S-M. This is a similar kind of time when there was this idea that, yes, well, God may have been involved in creation, but God has stood back. Sort of supernatural events, things like that. No, that's not something now that we hold to. We're very much involved in using our powers of reason. And alongside that was a jettison, in large part, of things like tradition. Tradition is specific to a certain time and place. And again, what they were looking for at this time was something which would be universally applicable, no matter what. And so all humans, so the argument at the time was going, have the same kind of powers of rational thinking. We don't need tradition. We can just focus on reason. And so this became very preeminent in the way of thinking, this cultural movement, which was known as the Enlightenment, with this strong focus on reason. Now, in the first video, I also talked about that, well, reason could also be understood, and it was understood at the time a little earlier by the likes of Richard Hooker, who was one of the key early Anglican theologians, so one of the forefathers, as it were, of the Church of England in terms of theological thinking. And the degree to which someone like Hooker would be thinking not of reason just as simply our innate rational faculties, but also something which has been redeemed and infused by the Holy Spirit, which then guides our thinking. So it's not necessarily somewhere which is, it's not necessarily a faculty, our faculty of reason. It's not necessarily something which is separate and isolated from the activity of the Holy Spirit, but in this intellectual movement, it was very much separated in the thinking of the key thinkers of the time, of as being separated from God, as it were, that our ability to think rationally, yes, it very much might be given to us by God, and we'll come back to that in a moment, but it's something that we can just use on our own. It provides us with a degree of independence and autonomy from God. We don't need to rely on God in order to think about God. We can do it for ourselves. And so underpinning this is a broad question. Oh, one more thing to say about the Enlightenment, that just to add this bit, that it's important that we're talking about the Enlightenment, because this is one of the key things that shapes our cultural moment, even today, hundreds of years later, is that if you've ever heard anybody talk about, you know, that you shouldn't talk about three things, you shouldn't talk about sex, money, or politics, or and you shouldn't talk about religion either, type of thing. And that was something that I was told growing up. And it may have just been my family, I don't know. But anyway, I think it's a fairly common thing that we don't talk about those things, or we tend not to talk about those things. And especially with regards to religion, that the idea was that this was something that was private. It's not something public. If you're going to be religious, that's okay. That's great, good for you, but get on with it in private. This isn't something that then comes into the public square, is the phrase. So when, and even today you see this happening, if you remember, if you're of a certain age, that when Tony Blair was Prime Minister, his communications chap, Alistair Campbell, turned around and said, we don't do God. And since then, various politicians in our country especially have sort of navigated this line as to whether they talk about being religious or not, because the idea being that, well, we want the space where we work out what we do as a society and so on and so forth to be based on principles of reason that anybody could enter into and participate in. So it's kind of like, well, that's great that you're religious. You may be a Christian, but in the workplace, you need to keep that just to one side or private, because this isn't something that should be, if you were to talk about it being on the basis on which you were making your ethical decisions at work or something like that, it could be like, yeah, no, you know, this is a private, religion is a private matter. Now, if you've heard that kind of thing, religion is a private matter, or ideas along those lines, that all goes back to this intellectual movement called the Enlightenment, which is the late 1600s and the into the 1700s. And so it all goes back to that. Now, for our purposes, thinking about how do we know God, this is reason is obviously very important in this. This is one of our key theological sources, isn't it? And we've talked about scripture, tradition, and reason, and experience, and worship. And so reason is number three on the list, as it were. And so underpinning it are two kind of questions. Well, it's a fundamental question which has sort of two angles on it. So there are two broad options. So let me just move on to the next screen about how we know about God. How do we go about knowing about God? If you remember, just in this video a little earlier, or maybe at the end of the last one, can't remember, I was talking about that reason is important, but I'm going to bring something else into play, as it were, just a point of contrast with reason. And this is a key kind of way of mapping. And we're going to spend some time just thinking this through, both with regards to ourselves and others and those around us. So here we go. So on the one hand, let's go, you've got reason. Okay, so you can see there on the left of the screen, reason. This is what I'm talking about with the kind of thing that was really came into full focus as a primary way of working things out in the period known as the Enlightenment, the late 1600s and into the 1700s. At the other end of the spectrum, if you think about this as a continuum or a spectrum from one end to the other, you've got revelation. So at the one end, you've got reason, where we can work out who God is and what God is like using our mental faculties, our powers of reasoning. Sometimes this is known as natural theology. We can look out the window and we can see things around us and we can look at how the world works. And from this, we can reason and work our way up to an understanding of who God is and what God is like. We can do our theological reflection primarily based on using our faculties, our abilities, our powers of reason and logic. And so At the other end of the spectrum, rather than we work out who God is, instead, God shows us who God is. Revelation. God. Now, I'm not talking about the book at the end of the Bible. Let's not go to that at the moment. Let's just stay with this word, revelation, with God revealing who God is. Now, implicit in this is the idea that in one respect, God is hidden. And that for us to have an understanding of who God is, God needs to act. God needs to do something in order to reveal who God is to us. If you go right down to the other end of the revelation spectrum, a theologian like the one that my cat's named after, Karl Barth, early in his career, he would say, there is no way that we can know who God is. Only God is able to reveal to us who God is. We cannot work our way up to God. It is only something that God can do by revealing God's self to us. And so these are two ends of the spectrum, really. So reason at one end, we're able to work our way up to God. We don't need God in order to work out who God is. We have our powers of reason, our powers of deduction, our powers of logic and so on. And at the other end of the spectrum, the position is none of that gets us anywhere. The only way that we can understand who God is if God reveals God's self to us. So that's the spectrum. I think I've put a line here on something. So there we go. A line with one end at the other. Okay, so there. Right. Now, one of the key ways that the tradition of the church teaches is that revelation is important. But at the same time, within the tradition of the Church of England and the Anglican Communion, and also within the tradition of the Roman Catholic Church and so on and so forth, this notion that reason is also important. You've got scripture, tradition, reason, experience and worship. Okay, so here we're holding reason at one end and revelation at the other. So we're not discounting reason, but we're also saying revelation is very important. Now, the thing is here is, like, where are you on this spectrum, do you think? So this is an activity to take, all right? Take your notebook, and if it's like one of these kind of notebooks, just turn it landscape, as it were, and at one end, write reason, and then at the other end, write revelation, and draw a line in between. And what I'd like you to do is take a few minutes. We'll take about 5 minutes to do the first part, and then perhaps a few minutes for each of the questions that are going to come after this. And my question for you to start with, and just to ponder, is to think about, where do you gravitate? If you think about this as a continuum, as a spectrum from one end to the other, from reason to revelation, where are you on this line? Where would you position yourself? You can just write a little stick figure somewhere on it and go like, me. But where would you be on this? And if that's really straightforward to you and you go like, oh, yeah, no, I know exactly where I am on it, then think about where maybe when you were younger, where was your younger self on this line or something. But if it's not something that's straightforward and you're going to take a while to work this through, then brilliant. That's what this is all about. Remember, in that very opening introductory video, I talked about thinking and learning to live theologically as jumping into a swimming pool and splashing about. And if this way of thinking about things is just like, whoa, this is, okay, I've got to get my head around this. This is going to take a while. Take your time. There's no rush. Just go with the flow. So I'm going to give you about 5 minutes, and then I'll come back. And then I've got a few more questions that are related to this for us to work our way through. Okay, over to you. Okay, so hopefully you've had a few moments just to jot down where you might be on this. Are you down the reason end where you can, you know, with your powers of logic and your rational capabilities, you can figure out who God is by looking around you in the world and just we can work our way up to working out who God is? Or are you more down the revelation end where God needs to jump down, almost, as it were? Rather than us jump up, God needs to jump down. And in which case, then, how does that happen? How does God reveal God's self? That's another question that we'll be coming to. So that's with regards to where you might position yourself on this continuum, on this spectrum. And yeah, you hopefully have put a little me or something like that. Okay, so next activity, which is related to this, because if you remember in the previous session, we were talking about who are we and that we are in relationship with other people and we are in certain places and certain times and so on and so forth. With that relationality aspect and everything, you and I are in relationship with all sorts of people in our lives who help define who we are and who shape who we are. Their thinking shapes our thinking. We're not autonomous individuals who are just like, I just think my own thoughts and whatever anybody else thinks has no effect on me whatsoever. It just doesn't work like that. We're very much shaped by those around us and what they think. So, starting off, let's just have a think about some of the people who might be impacting how we think as to whether we're more down the reason end of the spectrum on this or whether we're more down the revelation end of the spectrum when it comes to this question of how do we know God? How do we know who God is? Is it reason emphasis? Is it revelation emphasis? So the next person to think about is think about your minister. If you're in a church, if you're part of a worshiping community at the moment, and you've got a priest or you've got a minister, where do you think on this kind of line, this spectrum between reason and revelation, where do you reckon they sit? Where would they be? Take a couple of minutes, just have a think about it. Think about if they preach, think about their sermons, if they're just in the way that they talk about things. Are they focusing more on how we work things out rationally and follow processes and programs and so on and so forth? Or are they, yep, no, when the Spirit, we've got to pray for the Spirit to intervene in this, or we need to turn to Scripture or so on and so forth, and you know, all that kind of thing. Depending on which end of the spectrum, their language is going to change as to how they're kind of where they are on this spectrum. So have a think about where your minister or your priest is on this spectrum. Do that for a couple of minutes and then I'll give you the next question. Okay, so hopefully now you've got a little stick figure of yourself, and you've also got a little stick figure of your priest or minister on this line. Let's add some more people to this line and thinking about, are they more down the reason end of things, or are they more down the revelation thing? So think about some of your friends in church, if you're part of a worshipping community. And if you're not part of a worshipping community at the moment, then think about some of your friends in the ordinary warp and weft of your everyday life. Are they going to be much more down the reason end of the spectrum? This is how we work things out. In a minute, I'm going to just unpack a little bit more about what we mean by reason in a more contemporary sense, because things have moved on since the Enlightenment in all sorts of ways. And so we're going to come back to that in a moment. But for now, just let's stick with this broad brush kind of understanding. Reason end of the spectrum, revelation end of the spectrum. Where do your friends, do you think, sit on this line? Just add a few stick figures. Are they more down that end? Are they more down the revelation end? There we go. Yeah, take 2, 3 minutes for this. Okay, so we've got yourself, we've got the minister, the priest, and we've got some of your friends. It's beginning to get quite a crowded line. It'd be interesting to think, is there a scatter? There's a broad spectrum of kind of positions on this line, or is it mainly down one end or the other? Okay, so if you read books about the Christian faith, if you watch YouTube videos or you listen to podcasts, that kind of thing, where do you think the speakers that you tend to enjoy, really enjoy listening to, And you think, yeah, they're really helpful. Or writers that you really enjoy reading, thinking, yeah, no, they're helping me explore things and think things through. Where do you think they sit on this kind of line? Are they more down the sort of the reason end of things, where we can work things out rationally, and when it comes to understanding who God is, we don't need God's revelation for this, or are they more down the revelation end, and very much committed to the idea that God acts in history, God reveals God's self through events, through the created order. This is God revealing God's self to us, and that revelation can be like this this personal encounter, this sense of relationship that comes to us, and so on and so forth, which is quite a sort of a distance between the sort of, no, I can clearly work my way through to understanding who God is from more the kind of reason, what I referred to earlier as a sort of more natural theology kind of approach. So when it comes to the things that you read, the books that you read, the podcasts that you listen to, or YouTube videos that you watch about this kind of thing, where do you think the people, the ones that you gravitate to, where do you think they are on this kind of line? More down the reason end, more down the revelation end? Take a couple of minutes, 2-3 minutes for this. Okay, with those sort of voices that you engage with also added to this, as we go along with the course, something that I'd like you to bear in mind is, as you're in conversation with other people, you're chatting to them, we're having our conversations together in person and on Zoom, and just generally the conversations also that you start to have with other people over whilst you're doing this course, you're talking to other people, maybe at church, something like that. A question to have at the back of your mind is, where's this person stand on this, where do they sit on this reason revelation kind of spectrum? Are they more down the revelation end, or are they more down the reason end? And thinking about this will help us, you see, because much of the time, we don't agree. as in, we have differences of opinion. We think about things differently. And it's one of the things that's helpful about doing this kind of thing, thinking theologically, learning to live theologically, is that we start to have a reasonable understanding of why the person that we're talking to, the person that we're talking to, they may be just somebody out, you know, at work, or it may be somebody in our family, or it may be someone in church. And we realize that we're coming at things from quite different positions. And as a consequence, our perspectives and our conclusions are different. And it's helpful to sort of go like, I think I understand how we're getting to where we're getting to respectively and why. It's like, what's the underpinning kind of foundation kind of thing going on here? That this person's going to be more down this end of the spectrum. This person's going to... It's another way, I mean, with the other sources of theology, we're also doing this as well. We're looking at things from other perspectives and things. But this one sort of maps across them in a way. And it's been one that's been very important within our culture, in Northern Europe and also in North America and so on and so forth, since back in the 1600s, 1700s, right up to today. One of the things that's going on here, though, that complicates matters a little bit here, because by presenting it as a continuum from one end to the other, it's like saying at one end there's this, one end there's that. But in some ways, one could think about it as being a little bit more complicated, or a little bit more nuanced, should we say. And so just as we just move on to this little bit there. So, yes, we've done Where Does Your Minister Stand? Your Friends in Church. Huh, I had slides for this. I should have moved it along. Your books, podcasts, friends we want to listen to. Great. Done all that. Right. Image of God. This was sort of lurking in the background of our previous session. Who are we? And if you had a chance to look at some of the recommended or optional resources for session two, you would have come across some of the topics to do with image of God. And in Latin, the phrase is imago Dei. It's talking about that passage in particular that we looked at the beginning of session two in the Lectio Divina when we were reading the scriptures together. So this image of God understanding is that we are made in the image of God. Now, if we are made in the image of God, let's just go back to the reason revelation continuum here. The understanding is that we are created in a way, and this is one of the very early church kind of understandings of what we meant by reason, that by being made in the image of likeness of God, we were able to understand and encounter God in creation. And so it's not that it's a clear distinction between these two. And also that when we are encountering God in sort of more the sort of natural theological sense in creation, but it's because we have been imbued with these powers, given these powers, these rational powers, which derive from our being made in the image and likeness of God, that we are able to think about God in this way. So it's not that in this understanding that if it's to do with God and God's involved, it's down the revelation end of the spectrum, and if it's down the reason end of the spectrum, it's got nothing to do with God type of thing. No. Where you can sort of complicate matters a little bit and nuance this thinking is to think about, and as I say, the early church was very much on this, of the early church fathers in those first 400 centuries of the church, that when we're talking about reason, we're talking about something which comes from us being made in the image and likeness of God. And so our powers of reason are something from God which enable us to encounter God through creation and through the world around us. And it's not that our powers of reason are sealed off from the activity of God. In fact, not just sealed off from activity of God, they are very much that area of the activity of God. And also at the same time, they are derived, the powers themselves, the faculty, our critical faculties, our discursive, our ability to think discursively, to reason and think logically. This is all to do with us being made in the image and likeness of God. So it's not that it's one or the other, and it's only the revelation end that involves with God. Now, this gets very complicated, and I'm always teetering on the edge, thinking this is meant to be an exploring theology course. This isn't meant to be sort of like really go into the really deep end, but just to say that this is a live debate that has continued all the way through, even into the last century. There was a debate between not two cats, but between Karl Barth. Barth, named after, cats named after, and then another theologian, another a German theologian. Barth was Swiss, and the other theologian, Emil Brunner, he was German, and he was much more down the end of talking about that, you know, we are made in the image of God, and so we are able to reason and use our God-given reasonable faculties. There is going to be this point of contact because of us being made in the image of God, whereas Barth, right down the other end, saying, no, there is, as it were, a crevice between between God as creator and we as creation, and the only way that that is bridged is when there is agency, activity, event that is from God, which then crosses in that direction. This is not something that we are able to do just by intrinsically being human beings, being part of creation. So there are very different theological understandings going on there. Those debates continue to our day, and they are all around, and many of contemporary issues, hot button issues, so on and so forth, they are underpinning those. This kind of thing is being brought to bear as well, even if it's not explicit in how it's being surfacing in the arguments and so on and so forth. Right. At the risk of just thinking, oh gosh, Will, come on. I just want to take, because we've been talking about the Enlightenment, which was the name given to this period in the late 1600s and the early 1700s, where reason became preeminent. And we could, the kind of thing, we do not need tradition, we can be done with tradition, we can just then move on to thinking our universal powers of reason and everything, okay? And I just want to take a moment, I'm just going to talk to you about one of the changes that has happened over the last 60, 70 years, okay, with regards to reason. So, give me a moment, just going to change over the slides. So, with this understanding of reason, at the moment we were talking, up till now we've been talking about reason as understood since the Enlightenment, during the Enlightenment, the late 1600s into the 1700s, and the degree to which it has shaped thinking today. But things over the last 60, 70 years have progressively changed. It's really sort of, some of this goes back to the 1930s, but it really began to take hold in the 1960s, especially then gaining traction in the 1980s and right up to today. If you've heard anybody talk about, well, that's that may be your truth, but my truth is, yeah, is that familiar? And we've talked about truth as becoming more relative, and that's been a lot of what's been going on in our culture and more broadly over the last decade or so, especially. That is part of a movement that is called post-modernity. Modernity being the period that came before it, but the post-modernity, some call it not post-modernity, but late modernity. The labels, in a sense, don't matter. The key thing that's going on here, though, is that just in the way that during the Enlightenment period, that late 1600s, 1700s, and then thereafter, the key thing that was happening there was reason is paramount, and we do not need tradition. Tradition, which is the one that is passing on this understanding that there is this revelation of God in the scriptures or whatever, so on and so forth. We don't need that. We can be done with that. We just have our powers of reason. The period that has come since is to turn around and say, hang on a second, reason is a little bit more complex, folks. Reason is highly dependent on what might be reasonable for one culture and one society. Isn't reason, or considered to be reasonable, as in you can work your way to it through your faculties, your powers of reason and logic and so on and so forth, it seems to be much more context-specific, culturally specific. In certain times and places, our understandings of how we reason things and what we base our foundations on have proven to be different. And if they're different, that would seem to imply that they aren't quite the universal thing that the people back in the 1600s and 1700s were saying that they were. It was like, back then it was saying, universal, reason, everybody has it. And then suddenly we're thinking, well, hang on, what are the underpinning actual basis of all of this? And people go, it's a bit tricky. And so we've come to, as a broader culture, understand that people are coming at things, cultures and societies are coming at things with different understandings of what those foundations, those underpinning principles might be, which would suggest that they're not universal in the way that perhaps we thought. And so the period that's called postmodernity, which, as I say, primarily started a little bit in the 1930s, but it took root really in the 1960s and onwards, and really has shaped our culture to this day in large regards, is a movement where it's critiquing the, as it were, the neutrality of reason. Reason is not something that just sits beyond and is neutral and anybody can appeal to. It's actually much more culturally specific, contextual. It's embedded in stories that the culture tells about itself, about what it is to be human, and so on and so forth. So it's this period, whereas before the critique was of tradition, this period has, the critique has been of reason itself. And so it's an important thing to, again, have on our map when we're thinking about this, because as we've moved into our time, this multiplicity of understandings, which then lead people to get to the point where they can say, well, that may be true for you, but this is true for me, as if truth is something which is contextual, it's negotiated within your particular culture or subculture or even sub-subculture type of thing. And yeah, well, it, that might be true for you, but it's not true for me type of thing. That's a very different way of looking at the world from the Enlightenment period, where reason was considered to be something that was neutral and could be appealed to on a universal basis by anyone, anywhere, at any time. That has gone. The consequence of that change in a position, because as I was indicating with the reason position, there was a big critique of revelation. We don't need revelation. Revelation is unnecessary. This is it, and it's particular. And, you know, things like, well, this is dreadful. Only one group of people at one point of time who happened to have had this revelation could claim this to be true. But if it's to be fair and democratic and universal, then we need to be able to work our way up to it through our powers of reason. The fact that reason then gets critiqued and they say, hang on a second, that's not a universal either, it's a bit more complicated than that, folks, has opened again our willingness to pay attention to and listen to what we might have hitherto for a while dismissed, especially within the ways that we think theologically and learn to live theologically. And so that brings us back to thinking about revelation. So we're going to draw this video to a close, because one of the key sources of revelation as understood within the Christian tradition is, of course, the scriptures. So after a long circuitous route of just digging in a little bit more into what we're talking about with our theological sources, especially this one of reason, especially how that maps onto revelation, especially with the complications that come when we even meet, what do we mean by reason? We're now in the third video going to talk about why the Bible's important. We're going to pitch back to those questions that I left you with at the end of the second session about how do we learn to speak about ourselves, how do we learn to speak about God. This is all the reason why the scriptures are held to be of such paramount importance within the Christian tradition, and that's what we're going to do in the third video. Now, if I were you, after all of this, I'd take a break. Because that was a lot. And I think it's really helpful to get some of this on board conceptually, to start to have this on your map to think about when you're working your way through these things. But I wouldn't pretend. This is some fairly heavyweight stuff, but it's helpful to have it on our maps for when we're thinking theologically and learning to live theologically. So my suggestion would be, let this just bed in. Take your time. Don't rush to the next video. Just have a think. Let this settle. And then when you're ready, come back and then we'll do the third video. And that's when we're going to look at the question, why are the scriptures? Why is the Bible important? But we're going to be bringing some of this to play as we do. There we go. See you soon. Bye now.